अंसकपटुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धु वैव च पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। I think everyone remembers the pastime that we're reading about Jadabharat, who previously was a deer, and prior to that he was Maharaj Bharat. And as Jadabharat, he pretended to, as if he pretended to be, Jada means dull. He pretended to be dull, retarded, unintelligent, deaf, dumb. So, for a particular purpose, and the purpose was he didn't want to deal with the material world or the people within it, because he saw how dangerous it was to deal with materialistic things, because one's tendency to take Krishna from the center of one's life is so strong. It's so strong because we're conditioned souls, such a habit we have, placing ourselves in the center, and our own enjoyment is the key to existence. That's how we tend to think. So this is called maya or illusion. So he didn't want to deal with materialistic people. So internally he just remembered Krishna. Externally he pretended that he was dull. But at some point he decided to give his mercy, to share his transcendental knowledge with the world, and he chose a king, Maharaj Rahugana. And Rahugana had engaged him in carrying his palanquin quite unjustly, and he began to criticize and chastise Jadabharat because Jadabharat wasn't carrying it properly. Because Jadabharat, why? Who remembers why Jadabharat, what was the fault that he was committing? Didn't want to step on the ants, and that was causing the palanquin to move back and forth. Very uncomfortable ride. So the king chastised him, and Jadabharat responded with very sharp, cutting, philosophical words. And when the king heard these words coming from the transcendental platform, because they gave no reality, his words allowed for no reality for the identification of the body as the self. So the king responded, first of all, by bowing down, putting his head by the feet of Jadabharat, because he said he feared, because he had just yelled at Jadabharat, practically he was about to beat him. And he was fearful that a king by nature, a kshatriya, he's trained to be brave, to be fearless, because to be a warrior, one has to be like that. It's nature and also training and association. So although he was a warrior, a king, still, when he realized that he had offended a holy person, a person who spoke from such a high transcendental platform, that he became terrified of, that type of an offense. So he put his head at the feet of Jadabharat and begged his forgiveness, and he also asked Jadabharat to instruct him further. And in addition to those two things, apologizing, begging forgiveness and asking to instruct further, He also asked some questions, because he didn't understand some of the points that Jadabharat made. So the type of questions he asked some philosophical questions, how can I advance, and the answers to those, and what is the actual secure shelter that one really needs in this world. That question will be answered in the next chapter, or I think it's the 12th chapter. 12th chapter, now we're in the 10th chapter. But in addition, he asked some other questions. that he really couldn't understand the instructions of Jadbharat. So there's three verses that ask these questions, 21, 22, and 23. In 22, Jadbharat had said that the relationship between the master and the servant is not real, the master and the servant, because we're not the bodies. And now one can be the master and another person can be the servant. In the next life, it can be reversed. So he said it's not real. But Maharaj Vahugana said that the things created of the material world can affect reality. Even so, how can you say it's not real? So, for instance, if you do something in the material world, and you can create some bad karma for yourself, you can do something horrible, you can kill, you can eat this and that, perform horrible activities, and that karma that you create may bind you so deeply into the mode of ignorance that for thousands and thousands of births, how could you say that there's no reality there? How could you say it's not factual? Or, he said, you have said that designations like bodily fatness and thinness are not characteristics of the soul. That is incorrect, because designations like pain and pleasure are certainly felt by the soul. Because the only consciousness in the body is this consciousness that the soul gives it. The body itself doesn't have any consciousness. It's like a marble tabletop or something. There's no life in the body. It's the soul that gives life. So if you take a hammer and hit the body, the body doesn't feel any pain because there is no life there. So what feels the pain? It's the soul. So he said, how could it be? This is his question. How could it be that there's no connection at all between the body and the soul when the soul feels the pain? Because the body can't feel pain, there's no life in it. Pretty clever. And then in the third one, he said, the relationship between the king and the subject, or between master and servant, are not eternal. But although such relationships are temporary, when a person takes the position of a king, his duty is to rule the citizens and punish those who are disobedient. So if one punishes someone, or if one rules the citizen and makes them by force to follow the proper rules and regulations, they're elevated in spiritual life. So how is it that some material arrangement that's not real can elevate one in spiritual life? So he says, I can't understand. So he asked those three questions. He said, what you have spoken appears to me contradictory, O best friend of the distressed. Notice he's not saying what you have spoken is contradictory. He says, to me who has no knowledge, because I am foolish, I'm seeing contradictions. So therefore, please, O best friend of the distressed, you please instruct me, please, and forgive me and instruct me and answer these questions and the other questions I've asked. So now, Jadbharat in chapter 11 is going to explain the answers to these. He's going to answer these questions, but he's going to basically explain the root misconceptions, the root illusion, the root falsity that these questions are based on. He's going to explain the essence of what the illusion in the material world is, because that makes us see things improperly, upside down. It's like at the beginning of the math question, or when we're trying to balance the books and we make a simple mistake at the beginning, 1 and 1 equals 7 or something like that. And we make so many further calculations based on that one mistake, everything is going to come out wrong. So what is the root mistake and what is the cause of that root mistake? So he's going to describe that gradually. And then the whole chapter is going to, chapter 11 discusses this root mistake, the basic problem we have. Do you know what that is? Yeah. What is it that gets things wrong? There we go. Good student. So now the Brahmana, Maharaj Ruhugana, the Brahmana Jadbharat replies to the king's questions. My dear king, although you are not experienced, you are trying to speak like a very experienced man. So how is he treating him? A child, like a fool, like he's chastising him. Immediately, he's come and surrendered, and please forgive me. And immediately, what does he do? He chastises him. Consequently, you cannot be considered an experienced person, because your words, Krishna did the same thing to Arjuna. Yeah. Gatasun agatasins cha nanu sochanti pandava. Pragyavadam chabhasya se. You're speaking as if you are learned, but pragya vadam. A learned person won't say the kind of things that you are saying. So indirectly, he's calling him a fool. An experienced person does not speak the way you are speaking about the relationship between a master and a servant, or about material pains and pleasures. These are simply external activity. He's giving no credence to them. He's speaking from a completely different platform. He's speaking from the absolute platform, not from the platform of the practical platform of moving someone to the absolute plane. But he's speaking from this high platform that shows that the body has nothing at all to do with the soul. These are simply external activities. Iya maya, Mahaprabhu said. Any advanced, experienced man considering the absolute truth does not talk in this way. So, well, speaking learned words, Prabhupada actually quotes this, Sochanan Vasochas Tvam. Pragyavaram Chabasya say. Here's Prabhupada's purport. We'll read a little of it. Krishna similarly chastised Arjuna. He chastised him immediately. Asochanan Vasochas Tvam Pragyavaram Chabasya say. While speaking learned words, you are lamenting for what is not worthy of grief. Your words, the way you are speaking, makes it appear that you think that you know something. But what you are saying, the content of what you are saying, makes it clear that you're in ignorance. So therefore, he is not bluffed, because he's on this very realized platform. Prabhupada continues, similarly, amongst people in general, 99.9% try to talk like experienced advisors, but they are actually devoid of spiritual knowledge and are therefore like inexperienced children speaking nonsensically. Sometimes, did you ever speak to Shami? I don't know if you've ever had a conversation with Shami. We shouldn't record this here again. But sometimes he'll speak these very big words that he's heard around, but they don't make any sense to each other. He doesn't have anything to do with anything. Like a child. Intelligent one, that one is, but he put some big words together. But actually, if you listen to what he's saying, it doesn't mean anything. They're not based on knowledge, it's just nonsensical. Inexperienced children speaking nonsensical. So Prabhupada had the authority to criticize on this level 99.9% of the people of the world, because he was speaking from the absolute platform. And if you read the newspaper, or if you listen to the news, or if you talk to people, practically speaking, Prabhupada is being generous when he's saying 99.9 people are just speaking nonsense, because practically everyone is just speaking on the level of the birds and the beasts, just eating, sleeping, mating, defending, having nothing to do with the absolute platform. So he continues. Dadbrat continues. My dear king, talks of the relationship between the master and the servant, the king and the subject, and so forth, are simply talks about material activities. People interested in material activities, which are expounded in the Vedas, even if they're expounded in the Vedas, are intent on performing material sacrifices and placing faith in their material activities. For such people, spiritual advancement is definitely not manifest. So if one wants to live on that level, on that social, material level, how to make relationships work, how to this, how to that, how to economic development, how to all these different levels, how to become beautiful, how to become healthy, how to become strong. So if people's interest is on this level, material level, material activities, even if these activities are prescribed in the Vedas, they're placing their faith on the material level and their spiritual advancement will not manifest. So he's bringing the point to the Vedas, because the Vedas are these scriptures. These were what Ruhugana Maharaj was speaking of in the relationship with the king and the citizens. So the Vedas, the purpose of the Vedas is quite different from the material upliftment, etc., that are also in the Vedas. So the idea is that one has to give up all activities based on the material conception of life, even if those activities are from the instructions of Shastra, of scriptures. So he's speaking on a higher level than the Karmakandiya level of the Vedas. He's trying to bring it level to the Upasana Kanda of the Vedas, which means where one takes up worship, the spiritual level. A dream becomes automatically known to a person as false and immaterial. And similarly, one eventually realizes that material happiness in this life or the next, on this planet or a higher planet, is insignificant. What's he comparing all material life to? A dream. How much credence should we give to our dreams? You may dream, or I may dream, that I inherited thousands and thousands and millions of pieces of gold or dollars. Or I may dream, on the other hand, that I lost everything. But neither of them have any significance, because it's only a dream. So that's what material life is like from the absolute platform. Or walking into the insane asylum, and one person may be saying he's Napoleon, another person may be saying that he's, who are the typical ones? Jesus, Joan of Arc, someone, this one or that one. But you may say, when you may walk in there, you say, okay, John, could you just sit down for a second? I have to do something. Or, but actually, you know, this is all insanity. It's like they're dreaming it. It has nothing to do with reality. When one realizes this, the insignificance of material life, the dreamlike nature of the material life, then the Vedas, although an excellent source, they're useful to elevate one, are insufficient to bring about direct knowledge of the truth. Direct knowledge, direct experiential knowledge of the truth. So just like after you realize that life, material life, is a dream, then what? Because the Mayavadis, generally speaking, they'll realize that the material life is a dream, but they don't know what the positive nature of spiritual life is, what devotional service is. So what do they end up doing? They end up becoming very expert and enjoying that dream. They'll say it's a dream, but they'll try to enjoy it because they have no other alternative. Or they'll build hospitals. If someone has is dreaming that they're sick, does it make sense to build in their dream build a hospital for them? No. What makes sense? Wake them up. So very, 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 very heavy acharya type of preaching from this high platform, not allowing the lower platform any credence at all. So then the question comes, if material life is a dream, and we hear about it, we've heard about it so many times. Now what keeps us in that dream? What stops us from waking up? For the rest of the chapter he's going to discuss this. The problem is, as our Alan explained to us, is the mind. The problem is the mind. So from here until the end of the chapter, from verse 4 to the end of the chapter, he's going to describe this problem. As long as the mind of the living entity is contaminated by the three modes of material nature, which are, one of them? I thought you were going to say goodness. No, that was... What's another one? That's one. Goodness is another. And remember the third? Passion. Yeah. Goodness, passion, ignorance. So the mind becomes contaminated by these forces. And then his mind is exactly like an independent controlled elephant. Why is it compared to an independent controlled elephant? An independent controlled elephant.
Well, that one's very powerful. It has to go in the direction.
But how about? But the mind is compared to an independent, uncontrolled elephant. I might have said controlled. An independent, uncontrolled elephant. It's wild. It's powerful. Who can stop it? It's mad. It rushes this way. It rushes that way. Causes havoc wherever it goes. It simply expands its jurisdiction of pious, impious act. Sometimes it'll run this way. Then it'll run that way. Go here, crashing, smashing. So it expands its jurisdiction of pious and impious activities by using the senses. The result of that uncontrolled mind, or uncontrolled, wild, powerful elephant, is that the living entity remains in the material world to enjoy and suffer pleasures and pains due to material activities. So one must get off the material platform, but the mind holds us there with its being full of desires. And what makes the mind desire one thing or another? The modes of material nature that control it. Text 5 now. Because the mind is absorbed in desires for pious and impious activities. Sometimes if we're pious, if we're controlled more by the mode of goodness, the mind becomes absorbed in pious or good activities. If the mind becomes contaminated by the mode of ignorance and passion, just rush, anger, lust, greed, illusion. Just depends what modes affect the mind and what absorbs one. These instructions are so powerful. And we couple them with the instructions that Narada Muni gave to Prachini Bharishan about the mind, the subtle body being the cause of transmigration of what body will accept. Then it becomes still more frightening. Because not only are we giving ourselves trouble now, but for births and births and births. living entity remains in the material world. Because the mind is absorbed in desires for pious and impious activities, it is naturally subjected to the transformations of lust and anger. In this way, it becomes attracted to material sense enjoyment. In other words, the mind is conducted by the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There are 11 senses and 5 material elements. And out of these 16 items, the mind is the chief. So the 5 working senses, the 5 knowledge acquiring senses, and the mind is working them. And then there's the 5 element, and the mind is the power in that. Therefore, the mind brings about birth in different types of bodies, amongst demigods, human beings, animals, and birds. When the mind is situated in a higher or a lower position, it accepts a higher or lower material body, based on the mind's desires, we get a new material body. Text 6. The materialistic mind covering the living entity's soul. So the mind is a covering. Sukshma siddhya, the subtle body. It covers the soul. It carries it to different species of life. This is called continued material existence. Due to the mind, the living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness. It's all the suffering really takes place in the mind. Being thus illusioned, the mind further creates pious and impious activities and their karma, and thus the soul becomes conditioned. Purport. Mental activities under the influence of material nature cause happiness and distress within the material world. Being covered by illusion, the living entity eternally continues conditioned life under different designations. Such living entities are known as nityabaddha, eternally conditioned. On the whole, the mind is the cause of conditioned life. Therefore, the entire yogic process is meant to control the mind and senses. If the mind is controlled, the senses are automatically controlled. So if the mind is controlled, that implies that there's something controlling it. Right? Because the mind has to be controlled by something. So that means the intelligence or the soul is the one that should be controlling the mind. And if the mind isn't under control, it's like the wild elephant that's going this way and that way, whatever whim catches it. And the whims are caused by the senses. So how to control the mind? If the mind is engaged at the lotus feet of Krishna, Sarvayamana Krishna Padaravindayo, the senses are automatically engaged in the Lord's service. When the mind and senses are engaged in devotional service, the living entity naturally becomes Krishna conscious. So here again is the key to somehow or another, Sarvay Krishna Padaravindayo, Sarvayamana Krishna, Sarvayamana Krishna. That the mind has to be engaged in the lotus feet, on the lotus feet of Krishna. As soon as one always thinks of Krishna, he becomes a perfect yogi, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Yogi Namapi Savesham Madgatena Antaratmanam. Thus, the Antaratma, the mind, is conditioned by material nature. As stated here, Maya Rachit Tantaratma Swadeinam Samsriti Chakrakuta. The mind, being most powerful, covers the living entity and puts him in the waves of material existence. Puts the living entity in the waves of material existence. And what are the waves of material existence within the ocean of material life? Material existence is like an ocean. That no matter how powerful a swimmer one is, when one is caught in the ocean, one is doomed unless one is rescued. The mind keeps us there. The mind takes, text 7, the living entity within this material world. The mind makes the living entity within this material world wander through different species of life. And thus the living entity experiences mundane affairs in different forms as a human being. Demigod, fat person, skinny person, so on. Learned scholars say that bodily appearance, bondage, or liberation are caused by the mind. All based on the mind. Towards the end of Prabhupada's purport, he says, as stated in Narada Pancharatra, Sarva Padivani Muktam Tat Paratvena Nimalam, when the mind and senses are purified, one's total existence is purified, and one's designations are also purified. Designations means what we consider ourselves, the list of identities we have. Male, so many years old, strong, weak, athletic, intelligent, this, that, foolish, poor, happy, this, that. So many different designations, identities. So when one's mind and senses are purified, then one's designations are also purified. One no longer considers himself a human being, a demigod, a cat, a dog, a Hindu, a Muslim, and so forth. When the senses and mind are purified and one is fully engaged in Krishna service, one can be liberated and returned back home, back to Godhead. Text 8. When the living entity's mind becomes absorbed in the sense gratification of the material world, it brings about his conditioned life and suffering within the material situation. When the mind becomes absorbed in enjoyment, thinking himself the enjoyer, it brings about conditional life, and conditioned life in the material world means suffering. However, when the mind becomes unattached to material enjoyment, it becomes the cause of liberation. When the flame in a lamp burns the wick improperly, what happens? When the flame in the lamp burns the wick improperly, when there's not proper combustion. Yes, you read that.
No,
it's true. You got it. When the flame in a lamp burns the wick improperly, the lamp is blackened, soot. But when the lamp is filled with ghee and it is burning properly, there's bright illumination. When ghee burns, it's such a nice flame too. So auspicious, purifying. Similarly, when the mind is absorbed in material sense gratification, it causes suffering. And when detached from material sense gratification, it brings about the original brightness of Krishna consciousness. Purport. It is therefore concluded that the mind is the cause of material existence and liberation also. Everyone is suffering in this material world because of the mind. It is therefore proper to train the mind or to cleanse the mind from material attachment and engage it fully in the Lord's service. This is called spiritual engagement, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Mam Chayova Vicharena Bhakti Yogena Sevate Saganan Samatityaitan Brahmabhuyaya Kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the love of Brahman. We should engage the mind fully in Krishna conscious activities. Then it will be the cause of our liberation, for our returning home back to Godhead. However, if we keep the mind engaged in material activities for sense gratification, it will cause continuous bondage and will make us remain in this material world in different bodies, suffering the consequences of our different actions. Text 9. There are 5 working senses and 5 knowledge acquiring senses. There is also the false ego. In this way, there are 11 items for the mind's function. O hero, the objects of the senses, such as sound and touch, the organic activities, such as evacuation, and the different types of bodies, society, friendship, and personality are considered by learned scholar the field of activities for the functions of the mind. So the mind acts based on the false sense of identification. when it's acting, it acts in the service of the senses and has a huge field of activities based on the senses to try to fulfill its desires. And this is controlled by false ego, false sense of identification. So false ego and the mind are almost the same. The sense of enjoyment, the soul's sense of wishing to be the enjoyer, places it in the material world and immediately reflects his false ego. The consciousness reflects his false ego. And then when that is touched by each of the three modes of material nature, then the creation begins. And the living entity becomes enwrapped by this creation. It's based on the mind. Everything is based on the mind, which, where the desires are stored, and the mind is it goes with the soul, covers the soul and carries it from body to body. Sound, touch, form, taste and smell are the objects of the five knowledge acquiring senses. Speech, touch, movement, evacuation and sexual intercourse are the objects of the working senses. Beside this, there is another conception by which one thinks, this is my body, this is my society, this is my family, this is my nation, and so forth. This 11th function, that of the mind, is called the false ego. According to some philosophers, this is the 12th function. So some philosophers will say the false ego is separate from the mind, some will say it's basically one. This is the 12th function, and its field of activities is the body. So this is the expansion of illusion. Text 11. The physical elements, nature, the original cause, culture, destiny, and the time element are all material causes. They don't touch the soul. This is what all affects and moves the material world. But the soul has nothing to do with these things, nor does it have anything to do with the designations. This is all the illusory existence, the dreamlike existence, the mayic existence, based on the mind. Agitated by these material causes, the 11 functions transform into hundreds of functions, and then into thousands. These are like the desires and the functionings of the material world, the person within the material world. Thousands, hundreds and thousands, and then into millions. But all these transformations do not take place automatically by mutual combination. Rather, they are under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada explains Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita that all this whole intricate setup of illusion, maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharan. So this is all going on under Krishna's supervision. The material world is not functioning automatically on its own. It's Krishna who is behind all this. Text 12. The individual soul, bereft of Krishna consciousness, has many ideas and many activities created in the mind. Created by what? By the external energy, not by the soul. So many ideas, so many desires, so many plans, so many aspirations, so many fears. This is just creations of the material energy in the mind. They have been existing from time immemorial. And if one watches one's mind, one will see that the mind is always coming up with new, most important points to tell us at this very moment. But soon as, if you neglect it for 10 seconds, it will drop away and a new one will come. It was most important for 5 seconds only. And it pushes with such power and convinces, and we identify with it. but it actually is just hot air, just a balloon. There's nothing, no substance to it. But yet we take it so seriously, and it pushes us around, engaging us forever in the past and in the future, as long as we'll let it. Sometimes they are manifest in the waking state and in the dream state, but during deep sleep, unconsciousness or trance, they disappear. A person who is liberated in this life, Jivan Mukta, can see all these things vividly. We'll read a little of Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada is here explaining Chetragya. He's explaining how the soul is different from his field of activities. What he's done, as the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita also explains, he's explained that there's a huge field of activity. According to one's karma, one has a field of activities. So there's a huge for a human being, what he can do, compared to a small field of activities for some type of an insect who just burrows through the earth. He has an inch or two of earth that he lives within for his whole life. So the soul, he knows his field of activities. So he's explaining here in this verse that a liberated soul, he sees himself as different from his field of activities, the mind and the body and all the desires, etc., produced from that. And then there's two kinds of souls. There's ones who identify with the field of activities, who are conditioned souls, and then there are souls who are liberated, free, who live on the soul platform. Even though the mind may be going on, they don't listen to it. They perceive themselves as Krishnas. And then there's another type of Chetragya, knower of the field, who doesn't only know his own body, but he knows all bodies, and that is the super soul. So there's two kind of Chetragyas, and the individual soul, there's two kind of individual souls. One kind is the liberated one, and one kind is the conditioned one. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, the eternally conditioned soul is eternally conditioned because he is controlled by the mind. The conditioned state and liberated state are compared to the sleeping unconscious state, dreaming so many things, dreaming I'm getting old. It's a dream, it doesn't have anything to do with me. Dreaming I had a good day today because my horse won at the racetrack. Dreaming I had a bad day today because I slipped on a banana peel or something. All just dreaming. So eternally conditioned because he's controlled by his mind. The conditioned state and liberated state are compared to the sleeping unconscious state and the awakened state. The liberated state is the awakened state. Those who are sleeping and unconscious are eternally conditioned. But those who are awake understand that they are eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Just like when we're sleeping, we don't remember who we are. When we get up, and after we yawn a few times, gradually remember who we are, what our activities are, what we're supposed to be doing. So it's like that. When we awake from the conditioned state to the liberated state, we remember who we are. Therefore, even in this material world, the awakened souls, the liberated souls, engage in Krishna's service. That's confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami, Iha Yasya Hare Dasye. If one takes to Krishna's service, he is liberated, even though he appears to be a conditioned soul within the material world. Jivan Mukta Sa Uchate, in any condition, one is to be considered liberated if his only business is to serve Krishna. Text 13:14. There are two kinds of Chetragya, the living entity, as explained above, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is explained as follows. He is the all-pervading cause of creation. He is full in himself and is not dependent on others. Can anyone say that they are not dependent on others or full in themselves or the all-pervading cause of creation? No. This is another Kshetragya. He is perceived by hearing and direct perception. He is self-effulgent and does not experience birth, death, old age, or disease. He is the controller of all the demigods, beginning with Lord Brahma. He is called Narayan, and he is the shelter of all living entities after the annihilation of this material world. He is full of opulences, and he is the resting place of everything material. So this is Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who all the everything goes into him at the time of annihilation. He is therefore known as Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By his own potency, he is present within the hearts of all living entities. It's clearly not talking about the living entity who, in illusion, doesn't know that he's the Supreme Lord, that he's the resting place of everything, the all-powerful, but he's forgotten somehow or another. Obviously not. He is present within the hearts of all living entities, just as air or the vital force is within the bodies of all living beings. In this way he controls the body. In his partial feature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead enters all bodies and controls them as the pure Dakshay Vishnu. Text 15. My dear Rahugana, who is speaking? Jadbharat. As long as the conditioned soul accepts the material body and is not freed from the contamination of material enjoyment, and as long as he does not conquer his six enemies and come to the platform of self-realization by awakening his spiritual knowledge, he has to wander among different places and different species of life in the material world. Prabhupada's short purport. When one's mind is absorbed in the material conception, he thinks that he belongs to a particular nation, family, country, or creed. These are all called upadis, designations. Raise your hand if you're above 20 years old. Yeah, I just caught everyone. Almost everyone. As long as one's mind is absorbed in the material conception, he thinks that he belongs to a particular nation, family, country, or creed. These are all called upadis, designations. And one has to become freed from them. Sarva upadi vinirmuktam, freed from them. As long as one is not freed, he has to continue conditioned life in material existence. The human form of life is meant for cleansing away these misconceptions. If this is not done, one has to repeat the cycle of birth and death and thus suffer all material conditions. Text 16. The soul's designation, the mind, is the cause of all tribulations in the material world. Atmalingam. The mind exists as the false designation of the soul, basically false ego. As long as this fact is unknown to the conditioned living entity, in other words, as long as there's identification with the mind, he has to accept the material condition of the material body and wander within this material world in different positions. Because the mind is affected by disease, lamentation, illusion, attachment, greed, and enmity. These are the six enemies. It creates, because of these things, it creates bondage and a false sense of intimacy within this material world. Purport. The mind is the cause of both material bondage and liberation. The impure mind thinks, I am this body. The pure mind knows that he is not the material body. Therefore, the mind is considered to be the root of all material designations. Until the living entity is aloof from the association and contaminations of this material world, the mind will be absorbed in such material things as birth, death, disease, illusion, attachment, greed, and enmity. In this way, the living entity is conditioned and he suffers material miseries. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in, I think it was in Kormachetra, traveling in South India, he saw the leper, or near there anyway, he saw the leper, whose name was Vasudev. Was this the one who had the worms were in his body and they would fall out? He had leprosy and he would pick them up and put them back in. Just because this was their home. Just even thinking about that. Just imagine if that was your body and you had those sores on it and there were worms living in it. And they would fall out or something. You'd pick them up and put them back. How detached, complete non-identification with the body you'd have to have. So Mahaprabhu embraced him and cured his disease. But his disease actually was already cured in one sense, because he had no attachment to his material body. How astounding. The pure mind knows that he is not the material body. Therefore, the mind is considered to be the root of all material designations. Until the living entity is aloof from the association and contaminations of this material world, the mind will be absorbed in such material things as birth, death, disease, illusion, attachment, greed, and enmity. In this way, the living entity is conditioned, and he suffers material miseries. And the last verse sums it all up. The uncontrolled mind, and this was the cause of his, Maharaj Rahugana's, questions and problems, mental conception, Arjuna's too. This uncontrolled mind is the greatest enemy of the living entity. If one neglects it or gives it a chance, it will grow more and more powerful and will become victorious. Although it is not factual, it is very strong. It covers the constitutional position of the soul. O king, please try to conquer this mind by the weapon of service to the lotus feet of the spiritual master. Upasana astra. Hari Charan and Guru Hari Charan Upasana. Jahi, conquer the mind by applying it to the worship of the Lord and the spiritual master. O King, please try to conquer this mind by the weapon of service to the lotus feet of the spiritual master and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Do this with great care. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Now this purport gives some more practical instructions. There is one easy weapon with which the mind can be conquered. Neglect. Don't believe a word it says. The mind is always telling us to do this or that. Therefore, we should be very expert at disobeying the mind's orders. You know, those who don't like to listen to others end up having a very strong, another kind of strong master. And that is the mind, their own minds. We can't avoid surrendering to others. Gradually the mind should be trained to obey the orders of the soul. It is not that one should obey the orders of the mind. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that to control the mind, one should beat it with shoes many times left after awakening and again before going to sleep. In this way, one can control the mind. This is the instruction of all the shastras. If one does not do so, one is doomed to follow the dictations of the mind. Another bona fide process is to abide strictly by the orders of the spiritual master and engage in the Lord's service. Don't listen to the mind, listen to Guru and God. Then the mind will be automatically controlled. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed Srila Rupa Goswami, Brahmanda Bhamate Kona Bhagavan Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasare Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. When one receives the seed of devotional service by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's real life begins. If one abides by the orders of the spiritual master by the grace of Krishna, he is freed from the service to the mind. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports, 5th canto, 11th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Jadavarat Instructs King Rahugana. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. It's always amazing. You end up preaching about the instructions you need the most. You yourself need the most. Thanks. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
My brother, it was very interesting that in kids' mind, in listening to this field of activity of the mind,
yes.
Personality is being. You really tend to think of the personality as being reflective of a self, but in the field situation, it's not as it's just a field of.
Who we are now. The character, personality, what does it mean? The characteristics of our nature at this particular point in time.
Identity.
Yeah. Thank you. And that's composed of our conditioning from the body, society, nation, family, place of birth. That's Puramcha.
I think about my personality, think about it honestly, I have to admit I really think it's myself.
Take it seriously. Yeah. We must do that until we either one out of two things. Don't identify with it at all, which leaves us with nothing, basically, or just consciousness, with qualityless consciousness. Or we find out who we really are, who the sense of identity is actually springing from. Jivera Surupoi Krishna Nityas. Who are we, actually? What nature do we have? That is, to uncover that is the purpose of our life. Yeah, it's deep. It's a deep hole we've dug for ourselves, isn't it? You had a question?
You said the mind goes here, you know, and the mind goes. It's always like going from one thing to the other. But what if you? That's how you can only come to purification is by realizing that and then stopping. So really, if you didn't have that, then you wouldn't come to purification.
No.
Unless you're born without the mind.
No. What brings us to self-realization is the sense of not identifying with the mind, with its going back and forth, that we're different. We're completely different from that. But if one has a peaceful mind, one can still do that. And it's much better to have a peaceful mind, one mind that's in the mode of goodness. Because if for no other reason, if one's mind in the mode of goodness, when one chants Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can listen instead of thinking about all the things that we think about during japa. We can just simply hear Krishna's names. And then if we could just do that one thing, we'd make such rapid advancement in Krishna consciousness. But instead, what you called as a blessing, that our mind is going here and there and there, it's really our greatest friend for doing that. It's actually a great, great, great curse. But the beginning of the end of the curse is when we at least note that it's not me. It's really running today. But it's not me. My consciousness is something different. And that gives us a hope of non-identification and neglect. But it's not, it's a blessing. It's a curse. Yeah?
It's thinking of, you think that what we are striving for, we already inherently have within.
Yeah.
Our advantage in the mind going here and there, but we're out there.
Yeah. Our spiritual life is already within. It's just a matter of uncovering it and getting some help from Krishna too. Then I'll make it grow. Hundred times before going to sleep with shoes. 100 times after waking up with shoes. Boots and shoes. Okay, Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Tomorrow, chapter 12. More instructions. Very heavy, very stark cutting.